House Special Committee on Energy to order. Time is 3:07. Members present are Representative Dahlstrom, Representative Peterson, myself, Representative Millett, Co-Chair Edgman, and Representative Tuck. We are here, order of business today is to take up three House bills and a joint resolution. And the order of the bills today, just for the purpose of those here to testify on a certain bill, we'll do HJR 45. Representative Stoltz has a finance committee, and we don't want to slow down that process. And then we'll be taking up HB 296. We'll be taking up HB 303, and then last HB 31. At this time, I just remind folks to go ahead and turn off, silence your cell phones. And I have a quick comment about our meeting that was to be held on Saturday, the roundtable on the energy projects for Alaska. It was my fault. I was in Sitka in Seattle, and I had two of the presenters, or actually three of the presenters, with me flying around the beautiful state of Alaska. So we've rescheduled that to March 11th. We hope we didn't inconvenience too many people, and we hope that you'll all be able to join us at that meeting. Representative Edgman, did you have any co-chair?
No, thank you, Chair Millett.
Do you want to switch seats? Thank you. So with that, Representative Stoltz, we would love to entertain HJR 45.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Gentleman Co-Chair. It's really a privilege to be here. Thank you for putting this measure up. House Joint Resolution 45, which legislative resolution is really a letter we send in a more formal fashion expressing concerns about issues outside of our political boundaries here. And this is one of those cases. There's two of the congressional leaders, and certainly the White House is pushing forward a policy of cap and trade, which I believe has deleterious impacts on our economy should it be implemented. I think it would have on the whole nation, from the working people to just our simplest to our most complex industries. Probably one of the most all-encompassing, wide-sweeping pieces of legislation like some type of noxious gas, put a lot of our industries to sleep or really cripple them or paralyze them. I'm accused of hyperbole. I don't think that's hyperbole with this cap-and-trade legislation. There are two vehicles, one sponsored by Senator Kerry and one by Representative Waxman, both very diligent in representing their interests of their states and their districts and certainly philosophies they bring. I respectfully, and the co-sponsors of this respectfully disagree with the approach, and through the series of whereases pointed out some of our concerns about impacts on our nation and the economy. It's really about it. There are others that certainly from industry and from business. I've worked with the National Federation of Independent Business, our Office of the Governor, and other third floor entities. I've worked on communications as well through our Office of the Governor in Washington, D.C., and through our congressional delegation. I can only speak for two of them, Congressman Young and Senator Murkowski, expressing concerns about the cap and trade legislation, working with them on helping formulate this. And I'll just say, Ed, although we're not to the amendment part, I appreciate the constructive comment and suggestion by Representative Tuck, and the purpose of efficiency, I'd say I agree with what he's going to offer, I think, as long as he offers what we were talking about.
Gentleman's handshake.
This is fairly straightforward. It's a letter to the President of Congress and various cabinet officials and honorable leaders in the leadership and in our congressional delegation. Fairly pro forma in that. I have very personal concerns about how this affects all the, as I said, from the average working family, adding costs of their daily cost of eking out a living. And paying the bill, and what it adds to the living expenses of the average American family and individuals, all the way to what it can do to prevent a lot of opportunities that we as a nation have and we as a state. And I couldn't exhaust all the things that this legislation would affect, everything from the farming activities that go on out on Bodenberg Butte, the home of our Olympic hockey player. Where, you know, through use of nitrogen fertilizers, and I was just got an email from my cousin who's the head of the Montana Stockmen's Association, and they're worried about how it's going to affect those overly aggressive burping and flatulating cows. I mean, it's a real serious concern. I mean, it's something we flip about, which I just was, but it, I mean, they're just scared to death of it and how it's going to affect the cattle industry. So, along with other EPA issues, it's just piling on, Madam Chair, Madam Co-Chair, so, as I'm doing right now. So, that I'd welcome any questions, but I'd note there are people from the private sector who have equal and even more pronounced concerns than I have. So, I really appreciate bringing this letter forward, this strongly worded letter to Congress and the leader.
Thank you, Representative Stoltz. And let the record reflect that Representative Johansson has joined us. With that, is there any questions from the committee to the sponsor?
I have a question.
Representative Johansson?
Representative Stoltz, Mr. Chairman, why is my name not on here as a co-sponsor?
Oh, geez. Sonia, why isn't it on there?
Would you like this?
I did send an email to everybody, and I welcome the this is a bipartisan issue. It affects every American working family in this country, not just our state, and particularly your region.
Madam Chair, if I might.
Representative Johansson.
I was kind of being a smart aleck, but I do appreciate you introducing this. And actually, the three of us had a conversation in Wyoming about this, which was really amazing to hear the different the differences between the producer and the user states on this. And I'm glad you put this forward, and I will fill out a green sheet as soon as I can.
And Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, and Representative Johansson, I think the user states, they just don't know how affected they are. That's just, it's one of those things that trickles down, it just kills them a little more slowly, in the metaphorical sense.
Any other committee discussion or questions for Representative Stoltz? Okay, thanks, Representative.
Thank you.
Stoltz. If you want to just
ask
public testimony. So, with that, we'll open up public testimony. Do we have Mike Miller online?
My name is Mike Miller, and I'm testifying on behalf of National Federation of Independent Business, and I believe all of you probably have a letter from our state director, Mr. DeWitt, regarding our position on HJR 45, and we strongly support HJR 45, but I'm going to let you go ahead and read that for yourself. I guess I'm going to just kind of draw attention to the last paragraph, and I, as a small business owner, owning both a shop in North Pole and Ketchikan, Alaska, can kind of relate to the last paragraph here where we talk about there may be as many as 3,600 jobs lost in the state of Alaska if this federal legislation moves forward. And I know some of you may ask, well, how does that happen? You know, how are we going to lose jobs if this goes forward? Well, from a small business perspective, there are a lot of things that happens, and like you in the legislature, when it comes time to cut budgets, sometimes there are only a few things that we can actually cut. Like you, you can cut discretionary funds, but it's very hard to cut those program funds that you have out there, such as education, where you have formulas set up. And we in small business are much like that. You know, there are certain things that we can't cut. We can't cut our property taxes. We can't cut our debt service. But some of the things that we can cut are wages, and those are things that we do look at. In fact, this last couple of years has been pretty tough in my industry, which is the tourism and gift industry, and that's what we've had to do. We've had to go in and we've had to cut people in order to make it meet, you know, the ends meet at the end of the year so we can pay the rest of the bills. And according to the Heritage Foundation, they believe that the federal legislation will increase the price of gasoline by at least $1.20 per gallon. Well, what that does is that, especially in my industry where we are very heavily visitor-dominated and we depend on those people that come to Alaska, whether it comes by cruise ship or fly in and rent an RV or drive the Alaska Highway, the more and more that we raise the price of energy to get to Alaska, the more it decreases their exposable income, and therefore there's less that they are going to shop. And in many cases, we saw 2 years ago when the price of gas was hitting $5 in the lower 48, many of those people decided not to come to Alaska, especially those in the independent travel industry. So that makes it very hard for the businessman. Another way that we're affected, and we're all affected, whether you're in business or not, with the price of gasoline goes up, the Central Alaska is at the end of the line. It creates a tremendous amount of cost just to get services or goods to Alaska in order to sell, whether that be groceries or whatever the case may be. And in fact, as a sideline, I just received a freight bill from one of my freight companies, and we had a 20% fuel surcharge tacked onto the bill. And I expect if the price of gas went up another $20 or 20 cents, I would hate to see what that surcharge would be. In fact, I believe 2 years ago when we were at $5 a gallon, that surcharge was right around 35%. So from a very real point, I see how this could affect jobs, because especially small businesses, and it may only be one job here, maybe one job there, maybe four jobs over here, but if you add up the hundreds of businesses that will be doing that in order to stay alive, it will add up to that $3,600 or more, and then that's less money out of the economy. And we all have gone through the economic school where, you know, every dollar spent increases. Well, the exact opposite is true. For every dollar taken out of the economy, it affects that economy also in the negative direction. So with that, I probably have rambled on enough, but we do wholeheartedly support HJR 45, and we do hope that the legislature will pass it, just to send the message to Congress that at least there's one state that has a lot of concerns about where we're going with this particular federal legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Miller. I appreciate you being online for that. Next, we're going to go to Mira Kohler. Mira, are you online?
I am. Thank you. This is Mira Kohler. I'm president and CEO of Alaska Village Electric Cooperative, headquartered in Anchorage. We serve, as you know, 53 small villages scattered throughout the state. The issue of cap and trade and potential carbon taxes has been bandied around for the last couple of years, and every time I hear that, it strikes fear to my heart, because, as was mentioned by the bill sponsor, what it does is it hits hardest those that can least afford it. And in rural Alaska, where residents do not have the ability to be gently nudged towards alternative sources of energy that don't come from fossil fuels, they are going to be hit very, very hard. For example, if a ton of carbon goes on the market for $50, which is one of the lower numbers that we've heard, that translates directly to a cost in my villages of 4 cents a kilowatt hour. That's equivalent to MLMP having a 40% increase in their rates overnight. This is not a cost that can be absorbed. It is not a cost that can be justified. And I think that Alaska is doing the right thing by considering a resolution that sends a message that we are not going to roll over and play dead. We are going to fight this. This is an unfair tax. All it does is shift money out of the pockets of those that can't afford it to those that can. So I strongly support this resolution, and I urge you to pass it as fast as possible, and let's get working on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mira. Is there any questions from the committee for Mira? No, seeing none. Is there anybody else online that wishes to testify? Is there anybody here in the committee room that would like to testify? With that, I will close public testimony. Do you have any amendments from the committee members?
Yes, Co-Chair, I have an amendment I'd like to offer. I'd like to offer this as amendment number one. And do I go ahead and... So how's it go again? I propose amendment number one.
Representative Tuck, just for a little housekeeping, do you have the amendment written down, or is it a conceptual amendment?
That's a conceptual amendment, but I did write it down for you so you can see what I'm conceptually trying to put together.
So you can move conceptual amendment number one.
Okay, and I'll state the amendment if you'd like.
That'd be great.
On page one, line eight, and I'll just read it as it's written right now, whereas cap-and-trade legislation has been a presidential priority that has been backed by a partisan Congress, I propose amendment number one, which would delete that has been backed by a partisan and instead replace it with and is before Congress. So therefore, the that line 8 and 9 would read, whereas cap and trade legislation has been a presidential priority and is before Congress.
Okay, thank you. Representative Stoltz?
Not yet. Madam Chair, Bill Stoltz, District 16, which I think I forgot to do first round. I think that's a very constructive comment. Sometimes in our zeal to send a message, we don't, we're probably not, I appreciate the second set of eyes from Representative Tuck, and I think it's a very good constructive amendment in crafting this message to Congress.
Madam Co-Chair.
Representative Benjamin.
And I too would support the amendment. Clearly, we want the message be received in a constructive fashion as well, and I think that just contributes to that.
Thank you. Any other committee comments? You still have an objection? Representative Johansson?
I will save the committee time and remove my objection.
Thank you. With that, conceptual amendment number one has passed. Is there any other amendments before us? Seeing no amendments, Representative Benjamin.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I move that the committee move out House Joint Resolution 45 with individual recommendations and any accompanying fiscal notes.
Any objections? Seeing that, we will take a brief at ease while we sign the resolution. We have HB 296 from the office, from the Rules Office, requested by the Office of the Governor, and here we have to present, we've already heard this bill once. I think we came back to do some specific amendments. Brian, do you want to give us a quick recap? Put your name on the record.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Brian Butcher, Public Affairs Director for the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Our Chief Financial Officer, Joe Dubler, is here as well, and we also have a few folks online if there are specific questions that I can't answer. Would you like me to give a brief review of the bill? Or?
Sure, that'd be great.
Okay. What HB 296 does is, very briefly, it takes $18 million that came to us in stimulus funds for the state energy program and leverages that into up to $250 million in bonds, which we would use to do energy improvements to public facilities, municipal facilities, schools, pretty much any public facilities out there. And it would work as a revolving loan fund where you would hire an energy performance contractor who would give you an estimate on what the savings would be and an estimate on what the costs of doing the energy efficiency work would be. You would then take a loan out with AHFC, pay for the work to be done, and then the savings that you realize as a result of the work, the funds that you save would be used to pay back the loan. The way energy performance contracting works is if you don't get the energy savings that the contractor has promised you, he makes up the difference. So one way or the other, the corporation gets paid back. The program continues to revolve, and we continue to get as many buildings done as we possibly can.
Any questions from the committee for Mr. Butcher? Senator Benjamin.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Brian, issuing $250 million in bonds, any problem foreseen with doing that at this point?
Madam Chair, Representative Edgman, the bonds would be issued with the general obligation of AHFC, so it would have the backing of AHFC's finances, and it also isn't something we would do all at once. As an example, there's only four that I'm aware of energy performance contractors in the state. This is an area, much like with the home energy rebate program and the weatherization program, that when we started those programs or expanded them, there weren't a lot of people out there doing the work, and they kind of expanded with the work. Generally, when there's work to be done, people will get trained to do the work. So we would start and build as it went on. So it would grow over time as opposed to just going out for $250 million when we couldn't possibly find the people to do the work for it.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the committee? Representative Tuck?
Thank you, Madam Chair. On line 7 on page 2, money and other assets of the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan may be used to make loans to municipal governments, including subdivisions of municipal governments, and to the state for the purposes of financing energy efficiency improvements to buildings owned by the state or by municipalities in the state. Does that also include universities?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, in our discussions with OMB, there was never mentioned an intent to include university buildings in this. So I don't know whether it includes it or not. Is there anybody online that maybe you can ask that might know?
Sure.
I don't know that there is, but.
Is there anybody online that can answer that question?
Hi, Brian. It's John Anderson with HSC. We do believe that the intention was to also include the universities. We might have to clarify that, but we believe that is the intent.
Thank you. Mr. Pritchard, wouldn't do you want to come back to that? Do you want to clarify that before we move the bill out, or can you take care of that and then it's next committee referral?
Madam Chair, we can certainly take care of that.
Okay.
Because the process of going through, and we're going to be dealing with an amendment here that was another piece that was intended to be in the bill and wasn't explicitly listed in the bill, that has also been kind of picked up as we've gone along, both on this side and on the Senate side. So.
Okay. Great. Any other committee questions? If you want to just hang out. We do have, we'll open up public testimony, and at this time we do have some folks that did want to testify. I believe Joe Dubler, did you want to offer some testimony?
I believe, Madam Chair, he's just here for questions.
You're just here, okay. And John Anderson, is he here for questions also?
I believe all the HFC people online
okay.
are here just
And then we have Joel St. Aubin from DOT. Did you want to offer some testimony or just for questions?
Same. Just available for questions.
Okay, that sounds great. Is there anybody online that would like to testify on HB 296? All questions, okay. Is there anybody here in the committee room that would like to testify? With that, I will close public testimony. Okay, Representative Peterson, you have some amendments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move amendment number one.
I'll object for committee discussion.
Thank you. This was just an amendment that's intended to include more areas or more buildings that might qualify to get these loans. We've added the regional educational attendance areas to the list of buildings that would qualify to apply for these loans, and gone through and made those changes on the lines where they would be applicable.
Okay, thank you, Representative Peterson. Mr. Butcher, is the intent of the bill already encompasses REAs?
Madam Chair, yes, as we worked with OMB and the Department of Law on drafting on this, it was definitely one of our priorities to include REAs. We believe that it did. There's been conflicting discussion under whether it does or not, and being explicit with it in the bill, we are certainly fine with it.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments from the committee on the amendment? With that, I will move my objection, and amendment number one has passed. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The second amendment is more or less along the same lines as the first one. It would include Native organizations in some rural areas. They may not have a formal government of some kind, and so the Native organization may serve as the only organization in the community, and so I would like to have their them have the opportunity to apply for these loans as well.
And I'll object. Mr. Butcher, what kind of issues we run into with the definition of Native organizations under the statute? It seems to be a very broad group of people, and I don't know if that was the intent of HFC. Could you?
Sure, Madam Chair. Yeah, the concern we have on this is that although we're certainly supportive of getting energy efficiency work done in as many different areas as we can. In fact, the bill following this deals with commercial. This goes in a different direction than the legislation has been drafted for. It took us approximately 6 months to get our plan approved by the U.S. Department of Energy, which had to occur before we could do any of this, and it was specifically listed for public facilities. And I think it could bring some issues in having to go back to U.S. DOE and work that through.
Any questions?
That's kind of our concern.
Any questions on the amendment?
Co-chair.
I
can understand where the amendment sponsor is going with the amendment. And, you know, certainly having Native organizations in my district, this catches my eye. But we just passed an amendment that incorporated regional educational attendance areas, which encompasses a large part of the unorganized areas of the state and would, in theory, incorporate some Native organizations. But I don't know of any Native organizations that own public buildings. And frankly, I'm not I don't know that I've ever seen the term Native organizations put in a bill before. So I appreciate the intent behind the amendment, but as Mr. Butcher has alluded, I don't see it as being a necessary part of this bill. So for that reason, I'm going to oppose the amendment. But certainly, I appreciate that.
Any other committee discussion? My objection still stands. Would you, Representative Peterson?
After listening to what Brian said, I'll withdraw this amendment. It was just meant if the co-chair had thought of several places in his district that this might have fit in well, then maybe we might have been able to work it in there. But I don't want to slow this legislation down. I think it's a good bill.
And if I could add to that, Madam Chair, as we worked through the rural teacher housing and health and public safety professionals, we periodically come up on situations where we're dealing with small communities that have difficulty, and we're very good at working with them and helping them through it and giving them the leeway. So we're certainly, and you all know Dan Fowsky well enough to know in his decades in rural Alaska, that we really will bend over backwards to do everything we can to make sure every community can participate in the program.
Thank you, Brian.
I guess that does generate a follow-up question about
Representative
Butcher.
Benjamin.
Brian, how would this program treat housing authorities, regional housing authorities? They're not a political subdivision tied to a municipality. Their assets aren't public facilities. I don't think they're categorized that.
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, they were created in state law. There may be somebody, one of our energy folks or one of our rural folks, John Anderson or Bob Breen, may have an answer to that question.
John, are you online?
I'm sorry, I am now. Can you hear me, Madam?
We can, John.
We don't believe that any of their owned stock would be able to qualify in this. What we do see the housing authorities becoming a part of the process would be potentially to become the ESCO contractors to be able to do the work in a lot of these communities. But we do not believe that the that their own stock would qualify.
I follow up question.
A follow-up, Representative.
John, Bryce Edgman here. I know there's other funding streams and other programs that go directly to housing authorities, so I just wanted to, maybe you can respond additionally that, I don't know if using the word need is the right characterization here, but that there are sort of sufficient other programs that go to housing authorities and essentially not to have them in this bill is justified.
Mr. Edgman, you're probably exactly correct. I mean, the weatherization program, the way that it sits right now, all of our other HUD programs that we administer through HSC, there is a vast amount of money that is going to the regional housing authorities right now. And again, we're going to do whatever we can to encourage them to get up to speed, and a lot of them are already trained. We currently know that a lot of the stock, building stock in general in rural Alaska, is really built on a residential type of a system. We do know that clinics and the schools and some of those other elements are outside of that, but for the most part, the building principles are very similar on a lot of the buildings, and we believe the housing authorities with minimal training are going to be able to participate in this.
I guess just one last closing comment, Co-Chair, would be that in our omnibus bill, House Bill 305, we have a definition of public facilities that we may be revisiting, not to tie that bill into this bill, 296, but just as a note to bring for the committee.
Representative Edgman, is there any other committee discussion? Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure that the, just one more time, that the intent is to include universities when you say state, or to the state for the purposes of financing energy efficiency. It does include the university system.
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, yes. And we will certainly get back to you immediately on that once we've talked to OMB. The kind of where it morphed was it started out with the $18 million, where we were very limited because $18 million is not going to go very far. Then we looked at leveraging it to up to $80 million, and then we figured out we could leverage it to up to $250 million because of the revolving aspect of the loan fund. So as it got larger, we were able to have kind of look at more and more parts of public government participating, and that's why there's kind of a little bit of confusion through the steps. But certainly with the revolving aspect of it, we're going to be able to do over the years, I think, every building we're going to want to do, and that's going to include the university. But if that is not the issue, I will get back to you immediately on it.
Okay, so was that a yes or a no? I'm still trying to figure that out.
Madam Chair, Representative Tuck, that's a qualified yes. That's a yes, but I'd like to run it past the third floor to just make sure that our what we understand is what they understand.
Okay, and then Madam Chair.
Representative Tuck.
So would it sounds like almost like a conditional yes. What would be some of the reasons why it would be a no?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, I don't think it would be a no, other than if OMB said that wasn't what we were thinking. I do not think that they were going to do that, but because I have not had that specific conversation with them, I don't want to presume that it's an absolute yes until I at least run it by them, but I'm sure that's probably the case.
Representative Tuck, we can send a letter of intent to the Finance Committee with this bill saying that one of the questions that we have was universities to make sure that they look fully into that. If you're not satisfied, we can send that letter with the bill as we move the bill through.
Okay. I don't want to hold up the bill at all, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make sure that the intent, if that is the intent, is clear. If it's not the intent, then to try to clarify it. But as long as we all understand, where we're at right now, then I'll be more than happy to go along with the letter with you.
Okay. Thank you. Any other committee discussion? With that, we have
Madam Chair, actually, we have somebody from the OMB here that can probably answer that.
Perfect timing. You were so close. If you want to come up and put yourself on the record, we have a question for you.
Yes. Breathless.
I heard the question listening on my iPhone.
So you ran down from the third floor?
I have to catch my breath.
Just state your name for the record, please.
For the record, Jack Kreinheader with the Office of Management and Budget. In regard to the university, certainly the administration's supportive of doing this kind of work for the university. I am literally out of breath, so pardon me. As far as this bill goes, I'm trying to recall back to when we were developing it. I did have some information from DOT that the university was developing its own performance contracting program. And haven't really heard anything else about it, but I guess my suggestion would be that we follow up with the university, see if they are doing their own program or if they're interested in participating in this HFC program.
Thanks, Jack.
Sure.
Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So as the language is written now, does that mean that it's excluded?
The
referring to page 2, line 7.
And
eight,
I'm
nine.
Sorry, I don't have a copy of the bill. Hey, Brian. Good copy of the bill.
Here you go, Jack. There you go.
Okay, good. I'm sorry, through the chair.
Yeah, if you don't mind, Madam Chair, going to page 2 and looking at lines 7 through 9.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll read it real quick. Make loans to municipal governments, including subdivisions of municipal governments, or to the state for the purposes of financing energy efficiency improvements to buildings owned by the state or by municipalities in the state. I would want to know if does that language exclude university system?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, I'm not a lawyer, but university facilities are certainly state facilities. So in my layman's opinion, it would allow for university buildings to be included.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Follow-up?
No, I guess the only follow-up as a comment is if with that drafted letter going to the finance, I'm comfortable.
Okay, thank you. Any other committee questions for OMB while we have them here on anything? I'm just kidding, yeah. Thanks. Go ahead.
Representative Millett, Chair Millett, while I'm here, I had promised you some information at the last hearing on this bill about, you had some questions about the energy performance contracting work that DOT has already done. And I'm sorry, I didn't have time to make enough copies for the committee, and I'm sorry we didn't get it back to you sooner. I think I thought someone else was getting it to you, and they thought I was getting it too. So apologies, but I do have that available for you, and can give you a copy of that.
Okay, great. If we can give it to Jeff, he'll make copies for the committee members.
Certainly.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And with that, we have HB 296 amended before us.
Co-chair, I would move that I would make a motion that we move House Bill 296 as amended out of committee with individual recommendations and accompanying two fiscal notes, which are both zero.
And the letter of intent.
And also a letter of intent that would accompany the bill up to its next committee referral, the Finance Committee.
And hearing no objections, HB 296 has moved through the committee. We'll take a brief at ease.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Back into session. Next before us, we have HB 303 with Representative Olson. And with that, welcome to the committee, Representative Olson.
Well, thank you. Before we get into the bill, for the record, my name is Kurt Olson, House District 33, and with me is Jennifer Sinnett and my staff. But more importantly, on behalf of the my House District, I'd like to thank the Energy Committee for all the work you've done during the interim. It was definitely noticed by the people in my area and appreciated, but I'd be hesitant to speak for the whole state since I don't represent the whole state. And, thank you for the work you've done. But I'm going to be turning this over to Jennifer. She's spent an incredible amount of time on this, and I believe we'll be able to do a extremely credible job. And with that, I'm going to move back into the back row, and I apologize in advance. I have to leave in about 15 minutes for, I think everybody here probably has compressed schedules.
Yes.
From the last few days. But again, thanks for hearing it today. Yep.
Thanks, Representative Olson. Jennifer, would you like to put yourself on the record?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of committee. For the record, Jennifer Sinnett, staff to Representative Olson. The bill before you today, House Bill 303, an act establishing the Alaska Energy Efficiency Small Business Grant Fund and Program. The bill itself is relatively simple. I'm sure you're probably all aware of Alaska Housing Finance Corporation's wildly successful home energy rebate program. This legislation, what it's intended to do is mirror that program, but also open it up for small businesses. The Small Business Energy Rebate Fund and Program would allow small business owners willing or wishing to make energy efficiency improvements on their businesses to receive a rebate for some of their expenditures. And like the program for homeowners, the new program for small businesses would require that an energy efficiency evaluator evaluate the business structure to be retrofitted before and after the improvements, and then rebates would be dependent upon the relative amount of energy efficiency gained and the receipts from eligible improvements chosen by the business owner from the energy ratings improvement options list. And so HB 303 lays out three guidelines which businesses must meet in order to qualify for the program. The first is that the assessed value of the structure to be retrofitted or constructed cannot exceed $1 million, and this is really to make sure that we're focusing on small businesses here. The second guideline is that the structure must be owned by a person or persons licensed to do business in the state and who have no outstanding liabilities to the state. And the third is that the structure must meet additional criteria adopted by the corporation. This committee, as the sponsor has said, has done well to encourage the use of renewable energy and push for Alaskans to optimize energy use and use energy more efficiently. And so we think that extending this program to include small businesses would really complement your efforts over the last year. So that's a summary of the bill. It's relatively short, as you can see. I do anticipate, however, that there will probably be questions about the housing, AHFC's home energy rebate program, how that is operated, since this really is a mirror of that and would be facilitated by them in the same way. So as you know, we have some folks from AHFC here who are willing to come up and answer some specific questions about that program and about AHFC. I believe also we have on the line, or possibly in the audience, individuals from AEA, and they would be here to speak to their efforts with energy efficiency programs aimed more at the commercial sector. So with that, I would conclude my testimony and then open it up to any questions.
Thank you, Jennifer. We do have a question from Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jennifer, thank you for being here. Good job. Question for you. The real true small businesses in the state of Alaska, the majority of them don't have, from my knowledge anyhow, don't have a separate building. They might operate out of their home or their garage. So they would not be able to qualify for this program if I read it correctly.
Madam Chair, or Representative Dahlstrom through the chair, I suppose if they were working out of their garage, they could probably do it through the home energy rebate program. But that is a good point you make. And as I read this, I think that you're probably right. That might be something that we can work with. And I'm sure that the sponsor would be willing to work with you on making sure that they don't fall through the cracks. Okay. They certainly are small businesses.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that would be good. Contractors, electricians, all kinds of daycare workers, all types of people that write off portions of their home and have a business license. I'm not sure how we need to do it, but I believe that Representative Olson's intent is to include them. So thank you.
Questions from the committee? Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Is there specific language in the bill, or let me ask it this way, I guess. Can a non-resident small business owner who's got a license in the state under the bill qualify?
There, through the chair, Representative Edgman, there is no language in the bill that calls for residency, if that's what you're asking. Mm-hmm. You'll see in page 2, line 9, the person has to be licensed to do business in the state, or all of the people that are owning the business has to be licensed to do business in the state, and they can't have any outstanding liabilities, but there is nothing about residency.
Representative Edgman, follow-up?
Okay. I have a separate question I wanted to ask. I'm just trying to get acquainted with the bill. I've read it, but my second question would be the issue of raters. Would this concept work the same as the way energy raters work with residential users?
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, yes, it would. This is intended to mirror the home energy rebate program, but I believe if you do have any substantial questions about how that works for the home energy rebate program and how that would work for this proposal, I think Mr. Butcher might be a good resource.
Madam Butcher.
Representative Edgemond.
While the bill sponsor's here, I'm concerned about this bill because I see that we have a limited amount of funds available for residential users of the Home Energy Rebate Program. HFC testified here a couple weeks ago that we've got about 10% of the state covered now in terms of residential homes. And so that tells me that there's a vast amount of homes in Alaska that haven't been able to participate in this program. Apparently, we've got a bunch of money that's encumbered but not spent with HFC, such that HFC doesn't need more money into the Home Energy Rebate Program, but we're going to need more money into this program to make it work. I see the benefits of helping our small businesses out, but I could also sit here and argue that our small business rural Alaska should be into the PCE program. The bill sponsor, Madam Co-Chair, is at the table now, but maybe a question to him. Are we getting ahead of our residential users in a way that that may sort of foreclose their ability to get their homes done while we're satisfying small businesses' needs?
For the record, Representative Kurt Olson, through the chair, one of the problems in crafting this bill was we started on during the interim, well into the interim, and we didn't know, number one, what the surplus was going to be, if any, and number two, how well the Alaska housing program was going to go. So with those up in the air, we intentionally held off and figured that it would work its way out in the committee process. And I think recently we found out the demand on the Alaska housing, but I believe we have a fair amount of surplus. And again, that's probably something that will be dealt with by the Finance Committee, assuming it gets to Finance.
Unbelievable.
Let the record reflect that Representative Ramos has joined us.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
More questions for Representative Chuck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just looking at page 2, if the structure to be retrofitted, sorry, line 7, if the structure to be retrofitted or constructed with proceeds of the grant, A is owned by a person who is licensed to do business in the state or by persons all of whom are licensed to do business in the state. I know that there's a lot of small businesses that, as Representative Dahlstrom pointed out, that work out of their home, but additionally, that have long leasing contracts. So was this only geared towards the owner of the property, or is it the owner of the business and the property that they may happen to be leasing?
Representative Tuck, through the chair, this is intended to be the owner of the business.
So if I, Madam Chair, Representative Tuck. If I have a retail outlet in a mall and I'm the owner of the business, but I'm leasing, and it's a business that may have its own separate entrance from outside, but I'd like to be able to get new windows out front, mm-hmm. Who has to do the application and then who benefits from the program?
Representative Tuck, through the chair, as I understand your question, I'm going to have to get back to you on that, because as I read it now, I understand where you're coming from and how this is a bit unclear. So we'll either work that out in committee here or be speaking with you later about that.
Okay.
Representative Dahlstrom?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Olson, would you have a problem making this bill have a residency requirement?
Not at all. Free care.
Thank you. Madam Chair, that would be essential for me. I think there absolutely needs to be a residency requirement. I don't want to, I don't think it's right for us to give a hand up to somebody from out of state operating a business here when we've got in-state residents operating businesses here. I just don't feel right about that.
Thank you, Representative Dahlstrom. Representative Peterson.
Thank you. Madam Chair, my question was similar to what Representative Tuck talked about. The majority of small businesses in urban areas are in many malls, and many of them do have their own individual entrance. and they end up paying their own utilities, and those buildings that they're in are, for the most part, well over $1 million, and so the landlord would not qualify to have any energy efficiency retrofitting done. But the small businesses are paying higher utility bills than they would certainly like to be paying, and they may not be able to talk their landlord into making those improvements, and so they're sort of stuck between a rock and a hard place. A bill like this, unfortunately, wouldn't really be able to do a whole lot of good for a lot of those businesses. And so I don't know what the answer to that question is, but I just wanted to throw that idea out there. Maybe the sponsor of this bill has got an idea of what something could be done to help in that situation.
Through the chair, it was our intent to start small. Number one, we didn't know how much money would be available. We wanted to get the program up and running, and we figured that it would develop if it looks like it's a good idea, and we do think it's a good idea, that it would grow in several years, but we had to start small, and that was the original intent, and I think that's where we're at still.
Thank you, Representative Holson. And I think that the intent was truly for small business groups, and while I understand your concern about people in malls, I'm not sure the state's ready to get into retrofitting private citizens' businesses, and I see kind of that going down the road. While that would be nice, and the well is only so deep. Is there any other questions from the committee?
Representative Edmund? I think I'll save mine for when HFC comes to the table. I do have a couple others.
Okay. Thank you. If you guys want to stick close by, Mr. Butcher. Seem to be familiar to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Brian Butcher, Public Affairs Director for the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
We have questions from Representative Edgen.
Yes, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. First question, what is the definition of a small business in the eyes of HFC?
Madam Chair, Representative Edgen, I don't have an answer for that question.
Okay.
I guess it's the intent of the sponsor to make a decision on what he wants. And we've had meetings with Representative Olson's office, but we haven't gone into detail on anything like that. So they may have an answer, but I don't, unfortunately.
Can I follow up?
Representative Edgen?
We have a number of other programs by way of, I'm thinking of the Commercial Fishing Loan Act. I've got a bill in another committee that would make energy low interest rate loans available to commercial fishermen, who are small business entities. And my first instinct, by way of supporting this concept, but I'm not sure if I necessarily could support the mechanism in this bill. My first instinct is to wonder out loud whether or not that there might be some kind of a loan program that we might be able to provide small businesses statewide. And by expressing my support, I'll form this into a question. The question is that if this did advance to the Finance Committee, and the Finance Committee, as we know, certainly would look at it from the perspective of the cost and all the other programs that HFC administers. What's HFC's first take in terms of the impact on current users of the Home Energy Rebate Program, which are residential consumers?
Through the chair, Representative Edgen, at this point, the program has been highly successful. Speaking to what you brought up a little earlier in terms of where we are with funding, we're fully encumbered in the Home Energy Rebate Program, although we believe funds will become available as people get to the end of their 18 months and don't use the program. We also believe we'll be through our weatherization funds probably by the end of FY11. So certainly any passage of this bill, there would need to be additional funding for it, because that's not something the corporation currently has. When you bring up loans being a possibility, similar to the bill that just passed out, some kind of a revolving loan fund, possibly energy performance contracting, might possibly be something, just off the top of my head. And to speak to a question you asked a little while ago about how the energy audits would work for this, our ACWARM software that we use now to do the pre and post energy ratings on all residential, we're in the process of using federal funds to expand that to work with commercial buildings. And there's not a tremendous amount of work that has to be done because buildings are buildings, but there are quite a few differences between residential and commercial. And so that's something that's currently being worked on, although we do not have a specific timeline, 6 months or whatever, that we think the software would be done and ready to get going. But it should be sooner rather than later.
Follow-up, Madam Chair.
Representative Edgman.
I guess to further illustrate my sense of discomfort with the bill as it stands today is that I'm envisioning $1 million building owned by a small business corporation or entity or family or whatever it might be, and the home energy rebate program having a cap of $10,000. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So $10,000 for $1 million building isn't going to do a whole lot, especially if that $1 million building were to be out in the Cold Bay or be on Alaska or on Dillingham. So it would seem to me that maybe the bill sponsor might want to, if in fact this does go forward, that we think about maybe setting up a separate program, separate home energy rebate program, and certainly on the capitalizing end of things, that we would have to or the Finance Committee or the legislature as a whole would certainly want to put a lot more money into this program. And if that's the case, then I'm going to be there supporting more money being put into the current home energy rebate program as well as the weatherization program. So my point here is that I'm not necessarily going to object to the bill moving to the committee because I think this discussion needs to take place, helping our small businesses, helping our residential users, helping our housing authorities with weatherization money. That conversation needs to carry forward. And I'd like to see it take place at the Finance Committee. If this bill is the vehicle to do that, then I'm all for it. Although I am saying that I do have a level of discomfort with the bill as it's presently structured because I think there are some fundamental issues that need to be addressed somewhere along the line.
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, that's absolutely a policy call for the legislature and the governor on where your priorities are going to be, and we're just in a situation of administering what the priorities are.
Any other questions?
Any question?
Representative Johansson.
Thank you, Brian. On page 2, line 4, it talks about the grant allowing to build new business structures. Does HFC provide loans for small businesses now for new structures, or is this something new that will be in the corporation?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, we are at this point strictly residential. We don't have any relationship with small businesses. I haven't talked specifically to the bill sponsor about this language. I would imagine, and they can certainly correct me, that it's probably fashioned on our home energy rebate where you get a $7,500 rebate if you build a new 5-star plus home. And so I would imagine they're thinking if you built a new commercial building and it built it to 5-star plus, you would receive some kind of a rebate.
I follow up.
Representative Johnson.
So I guess I should ask the sponsor, but it's pretty obvious, so that's okay. I'll talk to the sponsor.
Representative Edgman.
Would the ACWARM software program have to be revised to make this work with the commercial buildings that are tasked with satisfying codes that are different than residential codes and so forth?
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, yes, it would, but that's something we're already doing for two reasons. One is, as part of accepting the energy money, we need to get back to the U.S. Department of Energy on what percentage of our homes and our commercial buildings are energy efficient and show some kind of progress on becoming more energy efficient. Also, with the previous bill, HB 296, passing out having to do with public buildings, the ACWARM software has to be updated to deal with those, because those are, you know, they're publicly owned facilities, but they're still a commercial building, you know, warehouse or a hangar.
Representative Edgemon?
Brian, we've already passed House Bill 296 out of committee, so we finished discussion on that, but might there be some mechanism down the road to incorporate this concept into this performance contracting system that House Bill 296 espouses?
Through the chair, Representative Edgemon, that's certainly something that can be discussed. We haven't spent a lot of time going down that road, but it's certainly something we can put some work into if, you know, that's what we're asked to do.
And just so the committee knows, Representative Olson did offer this up as an amendment to our energy omnibus bill, which, you know, I appreciate him doing that, and there might be a place as we go through the energy omnibus bill, if we have more questions, that we could, you know, flesh some of those questions out and then incorporate it as we're doing our CS for our omnibus bill, which he offered, generously offered to us. So that's an option that's before the committee, too. So if we get too wrapped up in some of the specifics of the bill, we could hold on to it and work on it and then do both. Other questions? Representative Tuck.
Thank you. Just real quick, Madam Chair. Thanks, Brian. I know you guys handle the energy rebate program, and you guys came up with the guidelines and conditions for that. And one of them is that it's, and I don't know if this is in statute or this is one of your guidelines, but that it's for one property per owner, and if they sell that property, it's done. It's a one-time deal.
Mm-hmm.
I see here on the last page here, under C, the corporation shall adopt guidelines, procedures setting out the criteria for administrating. Would that be similar to this? What if we had a business landowner that had a lot of retail outlets, individual places, and leased out? Would he be just only to one property and one property only, or would he be able to do individual properties going on out?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, I would imagine it would be a situation where one address was allowed to be used one time, because you're absolutely right. If somebody owns a lot of different buildings and is willing to participate in the program, however it's set up, it's going to be beneficial to the small business owner as well as to the state to have those energy efficiency updates occur. But that's something that needs to be discussed as we set the program up. So that's just speaking off the top of my head.
Follow up, Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just concerned also that you know, a lot of people have different corporations under different names and so on and so forth. And I guess that goes back to the definition of a small business. Is it a limited liability corporation? Would it be a partnership? Would it be an S corp, C corp? I guess that's I guess all of those can be defined underneath the small business, but just as long as, you know, a person does have a personal business over here, then has an S corp over here, then have a C corp with some partners over here, and another partnership to be able to take advantage of more than one property.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Tuck, that's something we would talk to the Department of Commerce and Alaska Energy Authority about. They currently do some work with small businesses, and in speaking with Representative Olson, he thought it was more appropriate for us. I mean, it's either a situation where we would administer the program because we have a lot of experience doing it, or AEA would administer the program because they have more of a history of small business than we do, but they don't have the history of doing this. So it's something that we would work in conjunction with other agencies to make sure that their expertise was used to benefit the program.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Ramos.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brian, nice to see you. On page 2C, it starts on line 14, it says the corporation shall adopt guidelines and procedures. Commercial buildings are, you know, are interesting would it be assessed value by the municipality? Would it be an appraisal? Mr. Chair, you're from a rural area. I come back to a conversation I had at the end of the State of the State with Governor, when Governor Purnell addressed us, and Representative Thomas and Senator Kukesh were talking about how you could learn foreign language in Angoon. And it was a fascinating conversation that we had. And so, for instance, in Fairbanks, I have my property tax assessment. because we're an organized borough. Doing an appraisal, you know, on a commercial building for $1 million might cost you $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000, $11,000, $12,000, depending on who can do it and how remote you are. If you're an unorganized borough, then there is no way to assess what the value would be. So I'm not sure what the guideline would be that would make it create some parity between a place in Dillingham, a place in Equawk, and a place in Fairbanks, and a place in Anchorage that has the cheapest energy costs in the state, which gets us to the GPS, which is merit-based versus needs-based, which is a whole different issue.
Through the chair, Representative Ramirez, that's something that probably would be easier answered by somebody. I know there's people from AEA, I think, online, and we don't have the expertise. We haven't worked on that. So hopefully somebody online can answer the question.
We do. We have Sarah Fisher and Sean Scaling, although they did have a fire alarm go off in their building, so I'm not sure. Are they back online? Okay. Sarah, are you online?
Yes, Madam Chair. We just got back into my office, and I apologize. I don't think we caught the entire question.
Representative Ramirez?
I think it was two questions. So the first one is, how do you assess the value of something by appraisal, by assessed value, and what happens if it's in an organized borough versus an unorganized borough? How would you ascertain $1 million as kind of an arbitrary figure? How would you ascertain valuation as you move away from what would be the methodology?
Through the chair, for the record, my name is Sarah Fisher Goad. I'm Deputy Director of Operations for the Alaska Energy Authority. Through the chair, Representative Ramirez, that is a very good question with respect to how you would provide some type of conformity across the state with respect to the assessed value. That is something that we would have to talk to other experts with respect to what would be the guidance on how to do something like that. So, unfortunately, I don't think we don't have an answer sitting here right now.
Representative Ramirez, follow up.
All right. Well, that would be an interesting one, is to determine how you would assess the $1 million valuation methodology in an unorganized borough, because you're not going to ask somebody to make the improvements to a 5-star plus get an appraisal. So that's a rather significant hurdle. And one way to resolve it is to make any structure of any value in rural Alaska eligible for the credit. And I don't know quite how you would determine, you know, maybe you could do it based on population density, but I mean, a property tax assessment is pretty easy in my community. It's, you know, for a house, it's irrelevant. 5-star, whether it's a $100,000 house or $1 million house, you're still, it's your primary residence. But as soon as you get into a commercial structure, you got a little bit of a can of worms. And so I don't know if you could apply a population density variable to that, so that any building, any structure in rural Alaska, or if you want to use how many people are employed there, might be a different variable that would be relevant for rural Alaska. 100 or fewer employees in rural Alaska, so that you put a net, you know, you cast a pretty big umbrella over there. But you got to figure out something. I mean, it'd be easy to do in Anchorage or Fairbanks or for anybody around this table, except for maybe you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Representative Peterson, do you have a question?
Thanks, Madam Chair. I was looking at another section. It mentions the phrase small business in here, and we would need to come up with a definition of small business, because a small business may mean 10 employees to some people. I think the federal definition is 100 employees or less, and for most Alaskans, people who had a business with 99 employees, they probably really wouldn't consider that a small business, because we have a fairly small number of
businesses. Pardon me.
99 employees or less. Now, maybe the representative from Fairbanks has got 98, and he considers himself a small businessman. I don't know, but in most average citizens, I would think a business that had around 100 employees, what they would consider to be a fairly large business for Alaska, even though in many areas of the country, that might be considered a small business. So we would have to come up with some sort of a definition of what a small business is.
Representative Pearson, I did put that on my list along with a residency requirement and the assessment issue, so I think we have some questions, good questions that are coming up that I think the intent of the co-chairs is to hold this bill but continue with the discussion, but I think that we'd like to help you, Representative Olson. Go ahead, Representative Olson.
Through the chair, Representative Edgeman, one of the concepts we kicked around originally was doing it on a square footage basis, which would get around the regional disparity because, you know, if you use 8,000 square feet or 10,000 square feet, it gets around the fact that it would be twice as much out in the bush. But that was one thing that we kicked around that we didn't follow up on. But again, we were hoping originally that it would come to the committee and the committee would roll it if they found it to be valuable into the omnibus bill.
On that point.
Representative Edgeman?
So it means if somebody brought their fishing boat up on shore.
You want to pay property tax.
Permanent structures. But again, it would be big enough to cover custom smoking operation, you know, garages, warehouses. But a square footage might be a tool to use. It'd probably fit into your computer software. But again, you know, I thank you for hearing the bill, and it does have a few kinks that need to be worked out.
Representative Tuck had a question.
Actually, Madam Chair, I was going to offer a suggestion to help the sponsor out based on Representative Rammers's comments, and that was to do it on square footage, but he just addressed that, so thank you.
Thank you. Representative Rammers.
Madam Chair, I just need to go on record just and help my colleague here to understand what a small business is. I assure you I'm a small businessman, and I employ 250 people, and I struggle against giants, and so we live in a relative world. Madam Chair, many of us found ourselves diverted or stranded the last couple of days, you included, and I assure you that that when I visited Silver Bay Seafoods, which moves 31 million pounds of seafood in the Sitka area yesterday, but when they are competing against Ocean Beauty and Trident Seafoods, that they are a small business, and so I certainly would not cast aspersions on my colleague, but for anybody to assign a numeric value of employees to determine what is a small business should read a couple of books on what a small business is and what a challenge it is at various levels to compete against various capital structures, and that's why I ran for office, as a matter of fact.
Representative Rammers, we are glad you are here.
Man, just made my blood run.
I hope you don't become a big corporate business, because then you won't be here, and that scares me.
Yeah, I'm scared right now, Madam Chair.
Representative Pearson is also scared right now.
Yeah, he ought to be.
Was there any other questions from the committee? Representative Tuck? Representative Edgeman?
Obviously, we've made the decision. We're going to hold the bill over, and I think we've got the agreement of the bill sponsor to do that. But I guess just one sort of parting observation in support of what Representative Rammers said, as well as a couple others around the table, is that the intertie between energy and economics very real, you know. And for us to help our commercial fishermen out, or for us to help any other sector of the state out, I would, you know, I want to go on record saying that if we could help our small business people out in some way, whether it be a favorable loan program or some type of assistance, that that we should explore that, and I would be in favor of working with the bill sponsor further to see what we can do.
Rizzo Olson, does that work for you if we hold the bill, and we have some and we also have some amendments from Representative Pearson that we'd like you to take a look at too while we go through them. Any other questions before we move on to our next piece of legislation? With that, we'll move on to Representative Olson's HB, I believe it's 31, net metering.
Good
with the committee's indulgence, I'm going to be leaving, but Ms. Sinnott will be able to handle this one. She's been working on it for well over a year.
And Representative Olson, just noting the time, we might be holding this bill, too, just to see how far we get along.
Actually, she can do it in 5 minutes.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Olson. Jennifer, welcome back.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of committee. For the record again, Jennifer Sinnott, staff to Representative Olson. I believe we have an amendment that we're hoping is introduced here in committee, and I can speak to that, but perhaps it needs to be, does it need to be introduced first?
Jennifer, if you want to just go ahead and go over the bill, the full bill before we get going here, I think that we want to catch people up on what we've been doing with net metering, and I'm sure you can talk about the new ruling by the RCA in regards to net metering and how that affects your piece of legislation.
Okay. Well, the RCA has been working on net metering docket for over a year, and they just closed out their docket in October, and I believe Chairman Pickett was before you a few weeks ago, discussing their regulations that they adopted. And those regulations that they adopted, that was the result of numerous public meetings. They heard a lot of public testimony, heard from all entities really involved in net metering, everyone who had an interest. And these regulations, that's what the sponsor, Representative Olson, he's interested in moving these regulations that the RCA has adopted. He's interested in codifying them because they are a good it's a good combination of looking out for all the interests involved, customers who net meter, customers who do not net meter, and the utilities that serve them. So the regulations that the RCA adopted in October, we think that's a good compromise, and that is that's really what the amendment is about.
Okay, with that, Representative Remmers, I'll take amendments.
Madam Chair, we just take a brief piece. I think we went and made copies of. Okay. Does everybody have any copy of this?
Brief piece. Yeah, we have. Record with that, Representative Ramos, do you have an amendment to offer?
Madam Chair, I do. I'd like to move amendment number one. It's A.1 Kane, dated 1/27/10. It says by Representative Olson on it, but I'm offering it for the bill sponsor.
And I'll object for discussion purposes. Mr. Representative Ramos.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We worked, bill sponsor worked with the RCA, and I'm not as especially familiar with the specific details of this, but we put into amendment form the regulations that were recommended by the RCA. And I have a document. I don't know if members have a copy of this document, which embeds the changes that were recommended by Chair Pickett when he came before us.
Representative Ramos, is it from Representative Olson? What document are you speaking of? You might need to get copies of it. You got it?
Docket.
I don't have the docket. No. Maybe we can get copies of the docket while we do that.
Okay.
Thank you. Committee discussion about the amendment. Or actually, Jennifer, do you want to walk us just real quick? Walk us through the sectional. I think you have a sectional to your amendment, and just walk us through that so we can.
Absolutely.
For those that don't remember Chairman Pickett's discussion on net metering, you can.
Absolutely. Just again to emphasize, when Chairman Pickett was here last month, when he did his PowerPoint presentation, this is exactly what he was talking about. It codifies it. It's word for word. And so I don't want to rehash everything that he said, but since we do have the amendment, since you do have it before you, I'll walk through it. The sectional analysis you have is kind of the bare bones. I'll try to elaborate a little bit on it right now. Looking at the amendment, subsections A, B, and D, they address the applicability as well as waiver opportunity of the net metering requirement. And generally speaking, as Chairman Pickett said, the net metering requirement applies to all utilities subject to economic regulation by the RCA. And there are two exceptions to this, which you will you'll see on the following page under A and B. That would be lines 8 through, looks like, 13. These exceptions, the first one would be an exception for utilities that get 100% of its energy supplied by renewable sources. So this is your hydro, solar. You obviously get the picture. That's the first exception. The second exception would be for independent systems with retail sales of less than 5 million kilowatt hours during the previous fiscal year. So as an example, Alaska Power Company serves 21 different communities, but only 5 of the communities it serves has sold more than 5 million kilowatt hours during the 2007 fiscal year. So Alaska Power Company would only, the only portion of Alaska Power Company which would be required to provide net metering would be that portion in those 5 communities which have sold over 5 million kilowatt hours. So I should note here that if a utility demonstrates that limiting net metering installations is necessary due to operational constraints, stability issues, then they would not be required to provide net metering. And this is line line 13 of page 2.
Madam Chair.
Representative Ramos.
Thank you. Madam Chair, a portion of this amendment that we're speaking to is similar to our visit to some of our rural visits, where we recognize the value of renewable energy sources, but they can only because they sometimes offer intermittent power, like windmills, they can only be a certain portion of the portfolio. Otherwise, it becomes expensive for the utility to reliably consume that energy. And so I think this is really should be perceived as something that protects the ratepayer base for smaller utilities by not creating a problem for the utility where they have to take all comers of electricity, because a smaller utility can't absorb net metering kilowatts in the way that a Chugach or MLMP or Golden Valley or some of the large producers are able to take that in. I think that's the nature of this provision of the amendment, I think.
Madam Chair, I agree with Representative Ramirez. If you'd like, I'd move along on the amendment here.
Sure.
Looking next to, subsections E through I, that really gets into the bulk of the net metering requirement, and specifically these sections set an overall capacity limit on net metering. If you look at section F, you'll see that a utility can opt out of the net metering service if the overall nameplate capacity of all net metering systems interconnected with the utility exceeds 1.5% of the utility's average retail demand. So kind of in a different way to put it is, for instance, if 25 self-generating systems come online and their combined output exceeds 1.5% of the average annual demand, the utility would not have to accept any new net metering customers. And you'll see that on page 3 under I, the utility can actually request an increase to that 1.5% capacity. Back on page 2, moving to G, this part precludes a utility from disconnecting existing net metering customers should the cumulative nameplate capacity of the net metering systems interconnected with the utility exceed the cap as a result of average demand going down. Page 3, section H. This requires a utility to annually publish its tariff, the number of kilowatt hours that are equivalent to that 1.5% of average retail demand. So that's just specifying that 1.5% there, making sure everyone's aware. Section I, as I mentioned, that's the part that allows a utility to request an increase in the 1.5% average retail demand capacity. And now to subsection L, This specifies the eligibility criteria for the consumer generation facilities, and this includes a generation capacity limit of 25 kilowatts, and that's on, I believe that's page 4, line 13, is the 25 kilowatt capacity limit. Subsections M through P, I think this is, a lot of people will be concerned here. This addresses the charges or credits for net electricity, and it's subsection M that really describes net metering, you know, the requirement that utility measure net metering consumers' energy consumption and generation, with consumers being billed for net consumption and receiving bill credits for the times when the generation exceeds usage. And you'll see on page 5, subsection 2, this is the important part right here, that compensation is based on a utility's non-firm purchase power rate. And as Chairman Pickett said last month, this is typically on an avoided cost type basis. Credits can be carried forward and they don't expire. I know some committee members have had concerns about this, so I just like to emphasize that if you build a renewable generation facility and you contribute more to the system than you take, you get credits, you do not get a check, but your credits never expire. Moving along, section N, where am I? Section N, that allows the utilities to charge net metering consumer for non-generation related consumer charges if those charges are authorized in the utility's tariff. Subsection P allows the utility to request a change to its rate design to incorporate a net metering customer class, but to do this, the utility has to actually demonstrate an adverse material rate impact on those who don't net meter. And then the remaining is definitions. So that's the major points. I realize that's kind of blowing through the amendment here. Just like to point out that we do have some folks online from the RCA. We have Rich Gazaway and James Keene, I believe, and they've been working on this for the past year at the RCA level, and they're really the experts on the regulations that they adopted, and thus we're trying to codify right here. So if you have any technical process questions, maybe that would be a good place to direct those questions. And so with that, I thank you for your consideration of this amendment, which, like I said, it just codifies the regulations that the RCA adopted in October.
Representative Edgman, but before you go, I just have a question. Did the RCA, was it a recommendation from the RCA to codify this into statute, or is it their wish to keep it under regulations? I mean, did you have that conversation with them? You've already adopted the regulations.
I do not know if they have explicitly, if Chairman Pickett, for instance, has explicitly asked Rep. Olson to try to get these into statute. I do not know, but getting these into, there are advantages to moving this into statute. This has taken, you know, it's a year's worth of work on the RCA's part, and to move these into statute would really obviously set it in stone as statute trumps regulation here, and ensure that you know, a change of commissioners wouldn't really change up the good work that they've done in creating these regulations. But again, Madam Chair, I don't know if he's had that specific conversation with Chairman Pickett.
Representative Edgman?
I think my question supports the question that you just asked, and I would be interested in hearing from the RCA whether or not this legislation may, in fact, and if I remember Mr. Pickett, and when he came before the committee a month or so ago, it was my impression that the preference was not to have this put in statute because it may down the road hamstring the RCA, or at least may limit their flexibility in terms of redesigning this regulation. So I guess I'd be interested in hearing from the RCA representatives whether, in fact, that still is the case or whether they support the bill.
Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have the same concerns. We have, like on page 1, line 13, the commission may modify or waive a requirement in this section in whole or in part by order. And then same thing with line 21, the commission may adopt by regulation additional requirements pertaining to safety, power, quality, interconnection, everything else. And so we're codifying things that, but we're also giving the commission still allowances to be able to make changes to these sections, at least section number one. If I'm reading that right, they can change section one if need be. So I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out, trying to understand the necessary purpose of putting it into statute.
And with that, I think this is a good time to ask the RCA. James and Rich, are you online and willing to take some questions?
Madam Chairman, this is Rich Gasway. I'm online, and I believe James is out sick today, but he's so dedicated, he's calling in from his home phone, so I believe he's available as well.
Thanks, Rich. And if you could just put your name on the record just before we move on, we have a growing number of questions for you.
Sure. I'm Rich Gasway, G-A-Z-A-W-A-Y. And I'm the advisory section manager for the Regulatory Commission.
Thanks, Rich.
At the time of the proceedings, I was the administrative law judge that was assigned to conduct the hearings and the process for the net metering regulations.
Thanks, Rich. And one of the questions that the committee has is there a benefit to the RCA having these regulations kind of fluid and in regulations rather than in statute?
Well, I can, Madam Chairman, I can basically comment on Representative Edmund's comments that having them in regulation provides us with a greater level of flexibility regarding our ability to amend certain standards within those regulations. I guess as far as whether we prefer them to be fluid or concrete, the beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So I don't think, and the commissioners themselves typically would take a position on a bill at a public meeting where all five have a vote. I'm a staff member without a vote, and so I can't necessarily speak to what their decision would be as whether just taking an official position on the bill.
Okay, thanks. I guess we need to get one of the commissioners online here and have a talk with them. Any other questions for the RCA while we have them? Representative Tuck?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. This is Representative Tuck just looking to see, you made the statement if it's fluid or concrete, but it looks like on the first page here, it says here the commission may modify or waive a requirement in this section in whole or in part by order, and this whole amendment is section one. What limitations do you see through this being a statute that may limit you from having the flexibility to make changes and to improve on the program?
Representative Tuck, through the chair. That waiver provision is modeled on several we have in our regulations that allows the commission to exercise its discretion where certain requirements are onerous to waive that requirement. And so it appears to be an attempt to provide some flexibility in the actual legislation, which is not legislative language that personally I'm used to seeing. So I guess the answer to that question is it would provide some flexibility. And it's modeled on RCA regulatory language.
Representative Ramers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'll just remind the committee, this is my amendment, and I want to defend the language in my amendment, and I'm very satisfied. I'm very satisfied with the language. What it does is it codifies the intent of the legislature for net metering, and net metering is, particularly for Alaska, is brand new, and I don't think that we want language that says shall. I think that would be so rigid that we would find ourselves not unlike where we all sit with legislative ethics right now, where we have some ethics laws that we wrote that are being interpreted by Leg Ethics in a way that doesn't seem to honor the intent of the legislature. And I think that the word may in here provides a sufficient direction for the RCA of what the legislature is trying to achieve, and B, sufficient latitude for the RCA to interpret that what works for various utilities, because we're trying to describe utilities across the state of Alaska, and the benchmark appears to be a utility that produces more than 5 million kilowatts. So in order for this to be a one-size-fits-all above the 5 million kilowatt threshold, it needs to have some elasticity in the way that we codify the legislation, and I think that that's my intent, and that's the intent of the bill sponsor who I'm assisting with this amendment. And so I think may is quite appropriate, and all of the supporting language is what gives them sufficient direction as to what the legislature means to accomplish.
Thank you, Representative Ramos. Is there any other questions for the RCA?
Just a quick comment on that, and that is I wasn't suggesting that we put in shall. I was just trying to figure out what limitations, or I'm still trying to figure out what this will do to the RCA and how it will empower or figure out how it will hinder. And I'm fine with the RCA having the flexibility to make those decisions. I'm just trying to figure out why we need to codify it and say they can make those decisions when they already can make those type of decisions. So just trying to figure it out, that's all.
Do we have any other questions on the amendment? At this time, I'm going to remove my objection on the amendment. Then we have the bill as amended before us. I do have four sheets of public testimony that we probably won't get to today. I'll try to get through as many as we can, but just for the committee, we will end up holding this bill. I don't think we have enough time to get through public testimony, but we do have the bill as amended now. We've adopted the amendment that Representative Ramos offered, so we have a working document in front of us. And with that, I will. We're going to go ahead and go to start public testimony. We'll probably go till about 5 after, and then we'll adjourn the meeting. I think we have lots of activities this afternoon. With that, I'll start in Nome with Jim Stimple. Are you online?
Yes, I am. This is Jim Stimple, and I guess you can hear me.
I can, and if you'd like to give us your testimony, that'd be great.
Yes, I can't tell from the House Bill 31 as written and the amendment whether or not this is a 2-meter or a 1-meter system. Does anybody there know if it's a 1-meter system means that 1 meter tells you how much power goes in, and if you're using your own renewables, it makes the meter go backwards, and you can get a credit for that.
Mr. Simple, I don't think the legislation addresses the how net metering takes place. It's a utility to consumer issue on how the metering works. It's not included in the legislation. So it's just on the regulation. We're codifying the regulations that RCA approved through their RCA legislation, which is the bill before us.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd like to go to another question. This is on page 4 of the amendment, line 15. And I was going to recommend that there be a provision that if you're a small business owner in rural Alaska, like Teller, that you be able to have an off-site grid-connected wind and solar system as a way to credit back your power usage on another site within the city of Teller.
Okay, Mr. Simple, is there other testimony you wish to offer?
Yeah, the third question I had was AVAC, I believe, is still, they produce less than 5 million kilowatts, so they have a waiver that they don't have to comply with net metering. Is that correct?
I believe that is the case, Mr. Simple.
Well, thank you for letting me testify today. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling in. And next we'll go to Mike O'Meara from Homer. Are you there, Mr. O'Meara?
Yes, can you hear me?
I can, if you just want to identify yourself and your affiliation and give us your testimony.
Yeah, indeed. My name is Mike O'Meara. I live in the Kachemak Bay Area. I'm here speaking on behalf of the Homer Electric Association Members Forum, a ratepayers group. And first of all, I would say we've been somewhat perplexed, too, regarding whether or not there's really a need to codify the RCA net metering regulations into law. I definitely, in looking at the amended version here that you're considering, would say that the members forum participants would be supportive of that change, certainly, if the bill went forward. Members Forum was active in the whole debate leading up to the adoption of the net metering regs. And consensus among us is that the RCA did a pretty good job of trying to balance all of the various interests and demands. Not that we felt everything was perfect, but we give them a thumbs up for pretty good work. So the question remains, do you really need to proceed with HB 31? And I just leave that out there because I don't have an answer myself. We are very interested, though, in seeing that nothing is done to diminish the nature of the regulations as presented. So as this amendment is discussed, and if it is adopted, any future language that's added, we would like to see as little change as possible take place, and certainly not affect what the RCA has set up at this point. We also would not like to see any language which in any way limits the ability of ratepayer groups to participate with the RCA in tweaking the system in the future if it seems that it is appropriate to do so to improve things. So at this point, it looks like whether or not you pass this bill, the language that allows adjustment remains. And we feel that that's fairly important. That's really about all I have at this point. I want to thank Madam Chairman for sending me an advance version of this amendment. It was very helpful, and I appreciate her fast response. I appreciate all the members considering this issue, and that's all I have.
Thank you, Mike. And just for the record, we did adopt the amendment, and that is now part of the bill. So,
excellent.
Thanks. Is there anybody else in Homer that wishes to testify?
I don't see anybody here.
Okay, thank you. And now we'll move to Kenai. Peter McKay, are you online?
I am online. Can you hear me?
Just state your name and your affiliation for the record and give us your testimony.
My name is Peter McKay. I'm speaking on behalf of myself. I have a couple of questions and a short statement. I've participated in the Regulatory Commission proceeding on net metering since October of 2006 is how long that's been going. I find that this bill is not as familiar to me, nor the amendment is quite as familiar to me as the Appendix A to RCA Order 09-1, Order Number 3. Appendix 1 from the Regulatory Commission, I'm pretty comfortable with. The amendment given by Representative Ramirez is considerably different. There are some differences in the language. There's differences in the structure of it. So I can't be comfortable that the issues that were worked out with the Regulatory Commission are intact as written in this amendment. And as such, so I have a few reservations about just approving the amendment as it's offered. I wish a line-by-line comparison could be made or a cross-reference created that identifies identical language, different language with the same intent, and identifies the differences and identifies the omissions in the amendment compared to the Regulatory Commission Appendix A, which is their Article 3 of Section 900 of the Alaska Administrative Code. So I think those are that really needs to be done prior to this bill moving forward. Is that a concern you can understand, Representative Ramirez?
Representative Ramirez has left the committee room, but Peter, if you could send some of your concerns via email to my staff and our Representative Edgman's staff, Jeff Turner or Adam Berg, that would be most helpful to look at what you're saying and take it up with the bill sponsor on a more formal level.
Okay, very good.
Thanks.
I have a few other specific questions about the amendment, if Representative Ramirez isn't available to answer those, maybe those are best written as well.
That'd be great, Peter, if you could submit those. We'll get answers back to you as soon as we can.
Okay. Thank you.
Is there anyone else in Kenai that wishes to testify?
Not at this time. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And with that, we'll move to Anchorage. We just have two folks left, and I think, I don't know if they're both going to testify, but we have Marilyn Leland from the Alaska Power Association.
Yes, this is Marilyn Leland, and yes, we were both planning on testifying. My name, for the record, my name is Marilyn Leland. I'm the Executive Director of Alaska Power Association, and as I think all of you know, that APA is the statewide trade association that represents the electric utilities that supply power to probably a little more than 500,000 Alaskans from Barrow to Onalaska and down the Inside Passage. And just to recap how we got to where we are today on net metering, from 2006 to 2008, net metering was being considered by the Regulatory Commission in their docket on the adoption of regulations to implement amendments to the Public Utility Regulatory Policies Act of 1978, or PURPA, by the Energy Policy Act of 2005. In that docket, the Commission was required to make a decision as to whether they would adopt the federal standards for Alaska for net metering. And they decided they would not adopt the federal standards, but instead they opened an Alaska-specific docket to determine whether they would require net metering standards that would be specific to Alaska. The docket was opened in January of 2009, and two workshops were scheduled for interested parties to work on the proposed regulations. Because the RCA docket was already underway last year, the Alaska Power Association recommended that the legislature not take any action on any of the bills addressing net metering that were before it last year. So as you know, no further action was taken by the legislature last year on any of the bills, and we believe that the RCA process was a success. As you've already heard from some of the others, there was exceptionally good participation in the workshops, with more public participation than the RCA has experienced in any of their dockets. In the workshops, Commission staff, utility representatives, and members of the public worked through components of the proposed regulations and came to agreement that all who participated could live with. The Commission issued an order adopting regulations on January 15, 2010. And now, with your permission, I'd like to ask Dean Thompson, who also represents APA, to discuss where we go from here, and then he and I would both be available for questions.
Okay, Marilyn, just quickly, I just have a quick question for you, Marilyn. Do you support this legislation?
Well, we, as I said, last year we were supporting let me put it this way. We have not gone to the membership with this bill and regarding the amendments that you've just been making today. And we still do have a resolution that supports leaving net metering up to the Regulatory Commission process. So, pending any talking further with our members, that would be our position.
Thank you, Marilyn. And just another quick question. You're going to be in Juneau with your association next week or the week following?
Actually, our conference is the week after next. However, I do expect to be down there next week as well.
Thanks. And Dean Thompson?
Yes, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. My name is Dean Thompson. I am a public utility attorney, and I also represent the Alaska Power Association. And I understand you're limited on time, so I'll try to pare down my remarks. As APA actively participated in the regulatory process that resulted in the RCA standards, APA doesn't oppose the substance of those regulations themselves as a reasonable compromise on net metering. However, APA does have some potential administrative concerns with codifying RCA regulations in statute, and we wanted to make sure the committee is aware of that. And I'm glad to hear the representatives of the RCA are on the line as well, because they may have more information about this. But my experience in practicing before the RCA for the last 20 years and in rulemaking dockets is part of the source of this concern. The main one is that it may create inconsistencies between statute and regulation. Although the RCA has issued an order adopting net metering regulations, those regulations are not yet legally effective or even final. The RCA's regulations will not be effective until after the Department of Law conducts its review, which can take months, and until final regulations are certified by the Lieutenant Governor. The Department of Law review may result in mere textual changes, or it may also result in suggested substantive changes, which under the Alaska Administrative Procedures Act could require the RCA to re-notice the regulations for additional comments before final adoption. In either case, codifying the most recent RCA regulations in statute may result in inconsistencies. For example, if the current version of the RCA's regulations is adopted in statute, that may very well occur before the Department of Law and the Lieutenant Governor's certification process are complete. That, in turn, may require the RCA to revisit its currently proposed regulations in light of the new factor that Alaska law now has a net metering statute, which was not the case during the year-long rulemaking process or the 2 years before that where net metering was looked at in another context. The risk of these types of issues increased significantly if there are any changes to the current amended bill language, and that's because that would make it differ from the RCA's regulations. Secondly, that risk increases if the Department of Law does in fact come back with suggested changes to the currently proposed regulations. And again, that's because the new regulations then might be different from those upon which the amended bill was based. So those are some of the administrative law type concerns that are raised from our perspective when you seek to codify regulations that are not yet final. I would conclude by going back to a discussion that I believe Representative Tuck was having regarding the section of the bill in Section 1, Subsection B, regarding the waiver language. One thing practicing before the Commission, I've seen this language in RCA regulations that allows the Commission to waive or modify a requirement that's in its own regulation. And so this is the same language as Mr. Gasaway indicated. But one important thing is the standard for that waiver, and it's on line 18, would be if the Commission found that no legitimate public interest would be served by enforcing the requirement. So this section, it would give the Commission some flexibility. The problem is that it's not complete flexibility or discretion. They couldn't decide that they like a different requirement better. The only way they could, under this language, modify or waive a requirement is if they found that that requirement had no legitimate, that there was no legitimate public interest in enforcing that. So I just offer that for the committee's consideration. But what I will say is that APA worked hard through the regulatory process at the RCA and worked with other stakeholders, and I think our members were not completely pleased with the regulations that resulted, but they were good enough and they were something that the member utilities could live with. And my perception from participating in that process is that all sides of the issue weren't completely satisfied, but it was something that worked for everyone. And after working through several rulemaking proceedings, I think that's a pretty good result. And the Commission, and particularly its staff, should be commended for bringing all of the parties together to arrive at those compromises, and also for holding technical workshops, which really facilitated the exchanges that were necessary to get this this carefully crafted compromise into place. And those are all the comments that I have, Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Dean. Are there any questions for either one of the APA representatives online? All right. Seeing that, is there any other folks online that we haven't heard from that would like to testify? Hearing none. Anybody in the committee room that would like to testify? And at this point, I'm going to go ahead and leave public testimony open in case we have some more changes to the legislation and we don't want to leave the public out of that. And Representative Edgman.
Yes, very quickly, Madam Co-Chair, I would like to take a second and recognize three students from the Dillingham High School who have been patiently sitting through the hearing and adding to today's hearing to their experience down here in Juneau, Tiana Peterson, Billy Neukesser, Kelly Evans, and they're accompanied by their teacher, Peter Johnson. So great to have them here today.
Yeah, thank you for being here. It's great. Any other comments from the committee before I gavel out? All ready to go to the game feed?
There's a game.
There's a game. And with that, I will adjourn the House Special Committee on Energy at 10 after.